Prelude. And the time came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. Anais Nin. Some years ago, I took a trip to the city of Jerusalem, where centuries are layered in stones and streets are carved into the layers, twisting and turning in haphazard patterns that divide and connect neighborhoods, markets, mosques, temples, and churches. One morning in that broken city, I sat alone on a well-worn wall at the base of the Mount of Olives. The day was moving forward with the kind of determination that comes from people with places to go and things to do. Religious pilgrims pushed past each other into the gates of the holy city. Men and women made their way to work and market. Children ran past them to school. But I had nowhere to go. The group I was traveling with in Jerusalem had risen early for the day's planned itinerary. I'd stayed behind. I could no longer keep up the charade that I was part of their adventure. I wasn't here to visit sacred sites or to walk the stations of the cross, wail at the Western Wall, or chant the 99 names of Allah. No, I was here to further delay making a decision about my life at home. I had come to Jerusalem only because my friend, who was leading the trip, was worried enough about me to pay my fare, which worried me enough to fly halfway around the world to a city as mixed up as myself. Now I was here, but really I was still back there, at home in New York, scared and confused about my crumbling marriage. Wandering deeper into the walled old city, I came to an ancient alleyway lined with shops selling religious artifacts for the Western pilgrim. Normally, I would veer away from these kinds of stores, inspirational sayings stitched in needlepoint, or Virgin Mary coffee mugs seemed no different to me than those velvet Elvis paintings you see at flea markets. But I needed help. I needed inspiration, even from a coffee cup or an embroidered pillow, or from Elvis himself. One narrow, dusky shop appealed to me, and I went in. On the floor was a patchwork of Persian rugs. On the walls hung small paintings, some of saints and prophets, others of mountains and flowers. Was this a gallery? A rug store? A gift shop? I couldn't tell. In the back of the long room, drinking tea at a low table, sat two Arab men dressed in white kaftans. One was a stooped and aged gentleman, and the other, his son perhaps, was a mysterious-looking character with gleaming eyes and long black hair like the mane of a well-groomed horse. After a while, the son put down his tea and came forward to greet me. Fixing his gaze on me, as if trying to read the secrets of my heart or the contents of my purse, he said in perfect English, "Come, you will like this picture." Taking my hand, he led me around piles of rugs to the back of the store near where his father was sitting. The old man stood and shuffled over to meet me. He placed his right hand on his heart and bowed his head in the traditional Islamic greeting. "Look," he said, pointing at a small painting hanging on the wall. He touched my arm with the kindness of a grandfather. "See the rose?" he asked, turning me toward the picture. There, framed in dark wood, was the ethereal image of a rosebud, with shimmering pale petals holding one another in a tight embrace. Under the flower was an inscription that read, "And the time came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom." Unexpected tears stung my eyes as I read the words. The two men hovered around me, more like bodyguards than salesmen. I turned away from them, hiding my face in the shadows. I was afraid that if the old man showed me one more ounce of mercy, I would break down in a stranger's store thousands of miles from home. "What is wrong?" the long-haired man asked me. "Nothing is wrong," I said. "I'm fine." "No, something is wrong," the man said.